The more supercomputing capacity the world has, the more it seems to need. Now the Energy Department has awarded contracts to six companies. It wants them to develop the first exascale computer, a machine capable of performing a quintillion calculations per second. Joining me in studio for the hows and whys of this project, the director, Paul Messina. Dr. Messina, good to have you on.
Good morning. Thank you.
What is the goal of this program?
Well, the goal of the Path Forward program that you alluded to is for the six companies who got contracts to develop technologies that are likely to lead to commercial exascale computers that will be installed at the DOE National Laboratories, as well as, you know, later by other sites.
And these are contracts, not grants.
Correct. These are contracts for research and development. So they're not contracts to build an exascale computer system, but to address the challenges that are in the way of getting to a practical, affordable exascale computer system.
And what are those challenges? I imagine power consumption of such a machine.
Absolutely, Tom. The four key challenges that we focus on are indeed power consumption. If you were to build an exascale system today with today's technology, it might require half a gigawatt.
That's like running Milwaukee for a night.
Indeed, that would cost, just the electric bill would be $500 million a year.
So that's not going to happen.
So it's not realistic. So power consumption is one. And so to do that, more innovative circuits, more innovative system design. And then to get this quintillion operations kind of goal, you have to have even more parallelism than we have now. I mean, today's systems have, you know, to a million to a few million hardware pieces that are working all the time. Multiply that by 1,000 almost. So billion-way parallelism. So how do you tackle that? Well, with better design of the pieces of the system, better ways to connect them, because you're talking about lots of things that have to be talking to each other. And we have to worry about how to program a system with a billion-way parallelism. A couple of other challenges are memory. You know, as the speed of computing goes up, unfortunately, the technologies for memories have tended to not speed up at the same level. And so now you have all this computing power, but you can't get data in and out. So data storage and memory is another big challenge. And so some of the research will be aimed at that. And then finally, reliability. When you have that big a system, that many parts, you want it to be, to a user, still pretty reliable. So a piece may fail every so often, but the average user, we're hoping, will not see a failure more often than, say, once a week, if that much.
Now, you've got six different companies: Advanced Micro Devices, Intel, IBM, Hewlett-Packard Enterprise, NVIDIA, I guess started out as a graphics company, and Cray.
Correct.
There's some competitors in here. So how do you, from a program standpoint, how are you dividing the duties so that they don't butt heads with one another?
Well, they don't work together in this program, the Path Forward program, which is part of the Exascale Computing Project the Department of Energy has. We issued a request for proposals last summer, and we got 14 proposals. We selected six, and within those six, we selected specific things for each of those six companies you named to do some specific research and development. So they're each working independently. Because, of course, you know, there's a proprietary work going on. However, we in the Exascale Computing Project manage each of the contracts with the individual vendors very tightly, you know, both to see their progress and also because we want the potential exascale applications to have an early view of what the technologies might be and the architectures might be, and the software developers for the libraries and so on to also be engaged in reviewing the progress of these companies.
Yes, because I guess if they're developing something that's unprogrammable, you'd want to know that pretty early.
Exactly.
And you also expect the companies to put in some of their own hard-earned cash too, not just the governments?
Right. The companies all had the opportunity to have everything be strictly proprietary or be able to contribute about 40% of the total cost. And that's an arrangement that we've had with companies in the past in this context of computer companies. It works out pretty well. So they put in quite a bit of their own resources because they're very interested in this, and they get, you know, the appropriate IP rights.
We're speaking with Dr. Paul Messina, director of the Exascale Computing Project at the Energy Department. And once this thing hopefully is operational somewhere down the line, a few years from now, what do you envision as the types of challenges in computing that it could take on?
Well, one of the wonderful things about computing, which is what attracted me early on in my career, is that it can be of benefit to so many different areas. So certainly, you know, at a high level, you know, scientific discovery, you know, astrophysics, for example, to determine, you know, how the universe evolved, how the all the elements that we're made of were formed. Energy assurance is a big one. You know, it has to do with so many aspects of it. For example, much more efficient combustion of internal combustion engines, development of new biofuels, more efficient wind energy, for example, being able to control the electric distribution grid in the United States is a big challenge. And for it to be able to take in these intermittent power sources like solar and wind energy. Economic competitiveness, you know, a lot of major products that companies make, jet engines, airplanes, automobiles, wind turbines, require a lot of design through simulation on computers, and those can be very complex designs. And, of course, national security, one of the main responsibilities of the Department of Energy is to assure that the nuclear stockpile, the nuclear weapons stockpile, is still reliable. And if, God forbid, we ever need to use it, it would be functional. And that is a massive computational aspect. So at that level, a little bit finer grain, one of the projects that we're conducting jointly with the National Cancer Institute of the NIH has to do with precision cancer medicine. And that's an exciting and obviously very potentially valuable project. So that takes into account, you know, hundreds of millions of records of individual cancer patients, the an individual patient's DNA, and on the order of a million different potential combinations of cancer treatments, and try to determine for this patient, for the type of cancer that patient has, what is likely to be the most effective. That's one aspect. There are others as well.
And relative to machines available today, you envision this being how many more times faster?
Oh, so we envision it being about 50 times more more powerful, faster than today's systems on actual applications, not as measured by looking at the hardware potential or by a simple benchmark, but rather on full complex applications that are addressing things that we can't tackle today.
And do you envision this being a single machine in a room somewhere, or is this some sort of a networked operation that would be in many locations?
So this will be a single machine. Well, the first one will be a single machine in one location. There will be more than one. I'll perhaps get to that later. But keep in mind that these systems are made up of many parts. And so you can think of a few hundred cabinets, each the size of a large refrigerator. But they're all connected, you know, very tightly with networks. So it is a single system to a user. The user can use the entire system as if it were a single system, because it is. So software has to play into it, how you program it, but it's not geographically dispersed. Now, the Department of Energy goal is to, of this project, to install the first exascale system in 2021 at one of the national laboratories. But there's also a plan to have, that's another one, potentially in 2021 or 2022. And then later, of course, there'll be more and more spreading throughout the national labs and perhaps industry, other agencies, and so on.
And when these companies come up with what looks like a satisfactory solution to all of these problems, who then would build it? Or will that be a separate contract?
It'll be a totally separate contract to build it. And in fact, I'm glad you brought that up, because the facilities that normally house the most powerful computers in the Department of Energy are at national labs. So Argonne National Laboratory, where I'm currently a staff member, Berkeley, Los Alamos, Sandia, Livermore, and Oak Ridge all have, you know, very large facilities. So those facilities will issue requests for proposals. And the idea is that they will get proposals that will be much better, hopefully, because of this path forward contract that we put in. So it'll be an RFP issued by the facilities, not by the project. And so it's separate from the R&D but the R&D is meant to lead up to the companies being able to propose something better.
So it could be that a market could develop for several companies to be able to build this, and then technology could be much more dispersed.
Absolutely. In fact, that is one of our goals, to keep the U.S. vendor industry highly healthy, and that typically means having several. We'd be delighted to have even more companies that are interested than now.
Now, we've been talking mostly about the hardware aspects of this and the power consumption and the interconnections and the networking, but there's a, as you implied in the first part of the interview, there's a huge software challenge, and maybe we should talk about those a little bit more.
Right. The exascale computing project has three main aspects to it. One is, of course, the hardware, you know, developing better hardware, and we've talked about that, but there are two other pieces that are equally important. And in fact, all three pieces have to work together in what we call co-design so that they feed into each other. So the other two pieces are applications development. So the applications that are aimed at mission-critical issues, you know, for example, better chemistry, better materials, for example, to design better batteries, you know, that are much more efficient, long-lasting, and light.
Which is one of the grand designs in all of electricity, I think, is some step function improvement in batteries.
Indeed, that is one of them. So these applications are complex. You know, they have a lot of physics, a lot of chemistry involved in general, or in engineering, machine learning in some cases. And so we are funding currently 25 applications across a broad spectrum of areas to get ready for the exascale systems. Now, we still don't know what the exascale system will look like exactly, but we have some ideas. Secondly, the software that's in between the applications and the hardware needs to be developed.
That's the operating system for this exascale?
Operating system is a lot of it, although that actually the vendors typically do most of the development of. We do help with some aspects of it. But above the operating system, there are many other pieces, tools for measuring the performance, for finding bugs, tools for visualizing the results, which often is the only way that you can determine what you've learned, programming languages, libraries for mathematics, so that, you know, experts in mathematics implement them as carefully as possible, and the application people don't have to, in every case, develop their own version of that mathematical operation. So the software is in between the hardware and the applications. The applications tell us what they need in terms of types of algorithms, and hopefully ratios of memory and computing speed and the type of computing. And so those two additional parts of the project are equally important, and they help drive some of the hardware design. They also have to adapt to the hardware design, where we can't control everything, of course.
Now, you have those six contracts out on the hardware side. Do you also have contracts out for that middleware development and for the application development?
For the middleware development and the application development, the projects were selected through a request for proposal process, you know, within the DOE National Laboratories, to some extent with universities. And so we currently have, as I mentioned, 25 application projects, each with a specific challenging goal. We have 66 software projects going on that hopefully will fill in the software stack for exascale in collaboration and coordination with the vendors, because they supply some of those things. Some of them also supply mathematical libraries, for example.
And how do they share their progress such that they know what they need to know from one another? Do you have conferences? Is it all online or a combination of both?
It's a combination of both. Certainly we have conferences, you know, there are currently about 900 people, not counting the hardware contracts, working on these aspects of applications and software. That's a lot of people. And so we have conferences and phone calls, you know, some are in person and some are by video, for specific applications that say, I need, a tool that will help me visualize things of this type and to identify features. And the visualization experts who have projects will then try to meet those needs. We also have online tools that essentially are a living database that all roughly 900 people can see everything in, so that they can easily see, well, who's doing what for fast Fourier transforms, who's doing what for adaptive mesh refinement, and keep the connections going that way. So that's an important tool as well.
We're speaking with Paul Messina, director of the Exascale Computing Project at the Energy Department. And what, relative to, say, business applications or digital services and all that kind of thing that the government does in great volume, how are these types of middleware and applications programmed? What languages do they use? Do they use agile development, popular word right now? How does it all happen?
Well, in terms of methodology, we are aiming at agile development, in fact, because you can think of this as we're trying to design a boat, I like to sail, and at the same time figure out how to best put the sails on the boat and steer it. So we have to be agile. As we learn more about what the hardware companies are doing, we can adapt some things. As we learn more about a new method for simulating a phenomenon, then we need to perhaps come up with a new library item as well. Now, in terms of languages, at present, mostly the languages that people have been using and evolving over the last few decades, so Fortran, C, C++, evolved versions of that, a lot of the parallelism is still and will still be handled by a message passing interface, which is a library for programming distributed memory. There are a few things that are more innovative, although not as as well tried and necessarily robust. Task-based parallelism, the Legion language, which is a collaboration with Stanford and NVIDIA and Los Alamos, for example, is part of the project, and so we're definitely exploring that. But by and large, it will not be dramatically different. Now, even a little bit of difference in these applications is nothing to sneer at, but there will be the traditional languages with appropriate evolutions, hopefully mostly under the cover so that the applications folks don't have to know too much. But inevitably for these applications, it will be quite an effort.
And how do you know when a component is finished? Say it's a software module or an application or a subroutine versus a piece of architecture in which you can say on the hardware side, okay, we can commit that to silicon, or maybe it's gallium arsenide, I don't know, and or to the software people say, okay, go ahead and compile that.
Well, as I mentioned, in the context of agile development, you're constantly making changes, but at a certain point, you need to try it. So we don't have the exascale systems quite yet, but certainly as we go along, we will always have test beds and be able to use the country's fastest computers, which are on the path to exascale, although there will be differences in architecture. So I mentioned co-design, that for the applications, the software and the hardware have to work together. So periodically, and we have milestones typically once a calendar quarter, the people who say, a software project says, I'm going to supply the right thing for this application or these two applications. So they have to commit. It's kind of a contact sport, right? And make sure that the routines can be called, that they yield the results that are needed, that they're accurate and fast enough. And then you run it on today's hardware. And then we also have simulators to try to simulate some future architectures to see if they work.
So in some ways, supercomputers are engaged in building the next generation of themselves.
Indeed they are. Yes, the simulation is quite important. Sometimes it's specialized hardware, like the FPGAs that are becoming more popular these days. You can simulate part of a new system that way, but often it is indeed just software simulators.
And do you envision the day when the machine will be built, the software is ready to roll, and somebody, perhaps you, will flip a switch and it'll come to life?
Yes, that is quite a wonderful image to think about. It may or may not be me, probably not me, but perhaps the current Secretary of Energy. But the idea of finally having a system running and running meaningful applications that will benefit the nation, that is a big goal for us. One thing that perhaps I should add about our goals, we want economic security to be something we contribute to. And so, for example, I established an industry council of currently 18 companies to help us design products that are useful for them at the exascale. Now, these are user companies. These are not the computer companies. They're companies like United Technologies, General Electric, General Motors, Eli Lilly, a pharmaceutical company, FedEx. And so, because we want to develop things that definitely are important for the national missions of security and energy, but also useful to industry. And so that is a big goal, to create something that has lasting value and will help many parts of the United States.
Dr. Paul Messina is director of the Exascale Computing Project at the Energy Department. Again, thanks so much.
Thank you very much, Tom.
Find more information and a link to the full interview at federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive.